The Eagle's Shadow by James Branch Cabell. 17.
By gad, said Colonel Hugonin, very grimly. Anybody would think you'd just lost a fortune instead of inheriting one. Wish you joy of it, Billy. I ain't saying, you know, we shan't miss it, my daughter and I. No, but gad, for it's a nice pot of money, and we'll miss it damnably. But since somebody had to have it, I'd much rather it was you, my boy, than a set of infernal, hypocritical, philanthropic sharks. And I'm damn glad Frederick has done the square thing by you. Yes, begad.
The old gentleman was standing beside Mr. Woods in the vestibule of Selwood, some distance from the other members of the house party, and was speaking in confidence. He was sincere. I don't say that the thought of facing the world at 65 with practically no resources save his half pay. I think I've told you that the colonel's diversions had drunk up his wife's fortune and his own like a glass of water. I don't say that this thought moved him to hilarity. Over it, indeed, he pulled a frankly grave face. But he cared a deal for Billy. And even now there was balm, soothing, priceless balm, to be had of the reflection that this change in his prospects affected materially the prospects of those cultured, broad-minded, philanthropic persons who had aforetime set his daughter to requiring of him a perusal of Herbert Spencer. Billy was pretty well aware how monetary matters stood with the old wastrel, and the sincerity of the man affected him far more than the most disinterested sentiments would have done. Mr. Woods accordingly shook hands with entirely unnecessary violence. "You're a trump, that's what you are," he declared. "Oh, yes, you are, Colonel. You're an incorrigible, incurable old ace of trumps, the very best there is in the pack, and it's entirely useless for you to attempt to conceal it."
"Gad," said the Colonel.
"And don't you worry about that will," Mr. Woods advised. I can't explain things just now, but it's all right. You just wait." "Just wait till I've seen Peggy," Billy urged in desperation, "and I'll explain everything."
"By gad," said the colonel,
but Mr. Woods was halfway out of the vestibule. Mr. Woods was in an unenviable state of perturbation. He could not quite believe that Peggy had destroyed the will. The thing out-Heroded Herod, out-Margareted Margaret. But if she had, it struck him as a high-handed proceeding, entailing certain vague penalties made, and provided by the law to cover just such cases, penalties of whose nature he was entirely ignorant and didn't care to think. Heavens, for all he knew, that angel might have let herself in for a jail sentence. Billy pictured that queen among women, that paragon, with her glorious hair cropped, and her pink-tipped little hand set to beating hemp. He had a shadowy notion that the lives of all female convicts were devoted to this pursuit, and groaned in horror. "In the name of heaven," Mr. Woods demanded of his soul, "what possible reason could she have had for this new insanity? And in the name of heaven, why couldn't she have put off her tête-à-tête with Canaston long enough to explain? And in the name of heaven, what does she see to admire in that putty-faced, grimacing ass anyway? And in the name of heaven, what am I to say to this poor old man here? I can't explain that his daughter isn't in any danger of being poor, but merely being locked up in jail. And in the name of heaven, how long does that outrageous angel expect me to remain in this state of suspense?" Billy groaned again and paced the vestibule. Then he retraced his steps, shook hands with Colonel Hugonin once more, and, Canaston or no Canaston, set out to find her.